ruin from the Desert Storm by Blue Sunshine, read by Sam Gabriel, based on the works of George Lucas. Chapter 3. At first the Yamri don't seem to understand why the Senate delegates are upset, and even once that matter is settled, it takes a great deal of argument and translation to realize that they will not be receiving the Republic assistance they were promised. Bennett quietly urged the delegates not to press that fact with the Yamri and was soundly ignored. They refuse to recognize the danger therein because they believe they are protected as Republic envoys, and beyond that, there is a Jedi with them. When the Yamri guards rise up around them and take them hostage, Ben surrenders rather than risk their lives. "This will only make matters worse for your people," Ben warns.
"Hush, Jedi," Bode snaps, trying to placate the Yamri. "Don't listen to him. We can still get them to send Republic forces."
"Bode, are you out of your mind?" Cedrin exclaims, only to be knocked down by the Yamri towering over her.
"We listen," Sadek says, multifaceted eyes narrowed.
"We will report back to the Senate that the Kalish have attacked the envoy and killed the Jedi. They will retaliate swiftly," Bode says.
"I will not do this,"
Lucerna says firmly, refusing to cower.
"The truth will come out about this, Bode. No matter how deep the Trade Federation pockets."
"We can say, Senator Sona, that the Kalish killed the Jedi and the Keldor representative," Bode replies thinly.
"Let there be no bloodshed," Ben says. They have made him give up his saber, and he did so without protest. He does not want to provoke the Yamri into cutting them down.
"Are we not too late for that?"
Hollum Wynn utters quietly, still shocked by the discovery of his own vulnerability.
"You should cooperate with the Yamri," Ben says. "It is the wisest course of action left to us."
"They want to kill you," Cedrin cries out, still on her hands and knees on the floor, looking disheveled and more irritated than hurt.
"No," Ben replies, pushing the suggestion through the Force as best he can with minds so foreign as the Yamri. "They only want me to be out of the way."
Surrender is his best option for buying time without getting anyone hurt. Obi-Wan is on his way to the Kalish, and Bode will call in more Jedi. All Ben needs is to be able to get the message through to them that the enemy is not who they think. The Yamri chitter among themselves, blade arms clicking and clicking.
"We will keep the Jedi," Sadek says. "Call your Republic."
Bode bows, and Ben reminds himself that everything is going according to plan, when a heavy strike from behind renders him unconscious. Obi-Wan stumbles from dense jungle right into an open valley an hour or so after dawn, and the realization that he's through, that he's been running all night, sends him wobbling to his knees and sinking into the grass. He can see the shapes and domes of a settlement down the valley and taste smoke in the air, though nothing is still burning. Death throbs from it like a wound in the body of the world, and violence, hate, more bristles over every life form he can feel. Obi-Wan can feel overworked muscles spasming in his legs, and now that he's not channeling the Force to push himself along, his lungs are burning, and he wants nothing more than to curl forward and pass out in the sandy grass. Spots blink in his vision, and he realizes he may not have a choice in the matter.
"I can't pass out now,"
Obi-Wan thinks frantically. He has no way to wake himself up, and it would waste too much time. He panics for a minute, before reminding himself that Jedi aren't supposed to panic, and starts gulping in deep breaths, then slowing, smoothing them out, deep inhales and long, slow exhales. He shifts himself into a more comfortable position, bows his head, and reaches for meditation. His thoughts slip, and darkness tries to pull him into true sleep. But he carefully pulls himself into his senses, his heartbeat, the whisper of a breeze, and the energy all around him leaning into it to shore up where his own reserves fail. When he feels refreshed enough to stand, Obi-Wan drags himself out of the trance and does so, wobbling a little at the start. It hurts walking, but he can do it, so he does.
trudging through the grass towards the settlement, stopping to drink from a cold, clear stream when he passes one by. The cool water quenches a thirst he wasn't aware was so dire, helping him feel less shaky and more alert. He tries in vain to reach out to his master through the force, but their bond is still weak, and all he can sense from the other end is that the other end exists and therefore his master is alive. He'd really been hoping that more time on missions with his master would strengthen their connection, but mostly Obi-Wan feels, as he always does, that he's just barely keeping up with his master's shadow, and is still so very underwhelming next to the older man's experience, wisdom, and skill. He senses when the Kalish spot him, the sudden convergence of attention in his direction, and stops walking. A patrol is heading in his direction, and he'd rather wait for them than keep trudging through the loose sand and grass. There are a couple of high, interesting cries, some kind of warning call, and then they are stampeding up and around him on some six-legged beasts, bristling with sharp, organic spears all pointed in his direction. They jabber in a language Obi-Wan assumes is Kalish, and he worries they won't understand Basic at all, but he has to try. "I am a Jedi of the Republic," he says, clipping his lightsaber to his belt, both to seem non-threatening and so he can lift the egg in his other hand high enough for them to see. "I've come to speak with you." "Counselors." Knight Gallia stands before the High Council, a statue of willpower and flesh. "The Republic has requested a force of 50 Jedi to be dispatched immediately to quell the violence on Tavorsky."
"On Tavorsky, a Jedi is," Yoda says. "His recommendation, this is?"
Knight Gallia pauses, closing her eyes briefly and breathing in, steadying herself, quieting the small tendril of guilt in the back of her mind that whispered she had not done enough, and she had not acted well when she last saw him.
"No, Masters. The committee reports that the Senate envoy was attacked shortly after their arrival on Tavorsky."
Another breath.
"They report that Jedi Master Ben Nassadeh and his Padawan Obi-Wan Kenobi have been killed by the Kalish."
Silence, stunned, shocked silence, slowly pervaded by a hum of doubt, grief, uncertainty, fear, that Adi does not fully comprehend and wonders at.
"Agree to the Senate's request, we do."
Yoda's ears droop, his eyes half-lidded, glaring at the marble tiles at Adi's feet.
"To Tavorsky, the Jedi shall go. With them, I will be. As it seems, I think, this is not."
"I'll go with you, Master Yoda," Mace Windu speaks out, and Yoda nods. With nothing further and feeling as if she has been inadequate, Adigalia bows and leaves the chamber. It's only when she recognizes the burning in her palms that she realizes her nails are digging into her skin. She did not like Master Nassadeh, but neither could she have claimed to have known him well enough to truly make that decision. And though she had sought to defend his Padawan, she had not known Kenobi any better than in passing either. The loss she feels is not only the death of fellow Jedi, but the death of all the lost potential between them personally, good or ill.
"I have judged rashly, and now there's none knowing if I have judged rightly," Adi feels. "And that shames me."
The Kalish were not quite as tall as the Yamri, but they weren't that much shorter either. Most of them had red-brown skin, dark tusks protruding from their jaw, and other than that, they all wore smooth masks over their faces, rounded at the top, flaring into points in front of their ears, and tapering into a narrow plate over their jaws. Most of the masks were pale and near seamless, giving any group of them together a frightful appearance, like the dark, faceless figures in old spirit tales used to scare younglings into behaving well. One of the riders had dropped off her mount to retrieve the egg, her deep, grating voice muffled some by the mask as she barked at her companions. Obi-Wan retrieved the eggs from his pockets, and those too were accepted and passed on to other riders, and he turned and gestured carefully to his hood, trying not to flinch when strangers' hands came so close to his neck to take them. He was shoved from behind once they were removed and stumbled, only to be jerked up by the back of his robe, gracefully heaved up onto a mount with another rider, in a saddle and pressed against an armored chest plate, neither of which were comfortable in the least. The ride was surprisingly smooth, despite his discomfort, and the beasts were impressively fast, the settlement sweeping towards them as swiftly as if they were in a Corazanti speeder. He was removed from the saddle just as disgracefully, with a crude shove, and they all watched him impassively as he crumpled against the dirt, accidentally biting down on his tongue when he slammed his head. They cry out across the settlement, more foreign calls and a surprisingly high lilt given their deep, grating voices. A pair of swordsmen run up to them, and they bark back and forth at each other, and Obi-Wan is starting to recognize that they are not angry with each other. The language is just shaped that way.
Jedi!
He hears clearly.
Jedi, come!
A Kalish swordsman lifts his blade in Obi-Wan's direction, making a broad follow-me motion with the blade. The female rider, who had first dismounted to take the eggs, pushes his shoulders and follows at his side, cradling the egg she took from him high on her chest, almost at the hollow of her collarbone. Obi-Wan swallows tightly and tries to keep his eyes on the Kalish and not on the blood on the road, trying not to focus on the smell of the bodies piled in off streets, or sense the echoes of their dying in the Force. They take him to the largest building in the settlement, where Kalish lounge on the steps and holler out at the sight of him in their midst. The swordsman hollers back, and they are let through without violence, though he can feel their gazes on his skin and the anger, black, dark, hungry anger, writhing inside of theirs.
Jai Shilal!
The swordsman calls out, and a lean figure in neatly tailored but dust and blood-ridden robes turns towards them, earning with his attention the attention of the other two Kalish he stood with. Obi-Wan had only the very basic details of the species from the mission brief, but he can tell that these three, two males and a female, are leaders, warlords among their people. They are not finely adorned or armored. They do not carry anything ceremonial about their person. Jai Shilal carries a slug thrower slung across his back, the female dual lig swords, and the other male a spear. But all focus whirls around them, all intent and purpose among the Kalish centered here. The swordsman briefly bends a knee and rises again at the attention of Jai Shilal, and quickly reports in their clipped, low to high toned tongue. Jai Shilal speaks quietly, asking a few questions of both the swordsman and the female rider, and accepting the egg from her grasp with reverence, all before deigning to grace Obi-Wan with a glance. The lines on his mask give it an uncomfortably skull-like look, and his reptilian yellow eyes gleam and narrow. The Kalish appear bald, but dress their heads in draping scarves, and it gives a similar appearance as hair. And Jai Shilal's scarves are blood-red, paired starkly with a bone-pale mask, reminding the Padawan deeply of the death that was wrought here.
"You are a Jedi. You are little."
Jai Shilal regards him, and the female murmurs something that might be laughter. He does not know the word for youngling, Obi-Wan thinks.
"I am a Jedi Padawan, an apprentice. My master has sent me to you," Obi-Wan says. "We were asked to come to this world by the Amri, who wished for our help in destroying you, but my master discovered why you had come to kill the Yamri and told them no."
It is an extremely simplified and not entirely accurate version of the situation, but they had no protocol droid to translate for them, and Obi-Wan wasn't sure how much basic the Kalish actually understood. He wanted to keep things simple.
"The Kalish know the Jedi."
Jai Shilal tips his head the other way.
"Your master has sent you. But where is he?"
"He is with the Amri still. We came here with four others who would speak on behalf of the Republic, and it was his duty to protect them,"
Obi-Wan says, trying not to let fear cloud him at the thought of that, at the knowledge of that. His master was still alive. The bond between them, such as it was, let him know that much. The other two Kalish warlords mutter at that, the female peering intently at Obi-Wan, who does his best to project Jedi serenity.
That was not wise,
Shashilal says.
The Yamri are savages.
We do what we must, Obi-Wan retorts, and then bites his cheek to scold himself for it.
That is true, the female speaks, tipping her head forward in acknowledgement. And you came to us with life in your hands. Speak as you were bid to, she says. We will listen.
Obi-Wan glances between the pair, but they seem at ease. No discord between them which might spell disaster for him should he err, and so he speaks.
We came here to stop the violence, and though we will not do as the Yamri wish, that is still our goal. We understand now that the Yamri are in the wrong, and the Republic will not stand for what they have done, but neither can the Jedi allow this genocide to continue, Obi-Wan says. I have been sent to discuss what terms you might agree to in order to end this bloodshed.
Jashilau snarls, raising a heavy-scaled hand.
We will not agree to terms with Hook. They began this violence.
The female is calmer, but only just, and her voice grinds coldly for all that she speaks basic more clearly.
They have enslaved and brutalized our people for generations. They eat our children. And you think we will show them mercy? You think we will not rid the galaxy of every last rotten husk of them?
Obi-Wan struggles to find a way to refute her argument which will not get him speared, and wishes his master were here. His master never seemed lost for words, and he wouldn't be so afraid.
We do what we must,
Obi-Wan repeats, cold sweat trickling down his back. Over the tacky, itching peel of the sweat already dried there.
And I'm a Jedi. I must try and find a peaceful solution.
The female turns to Jashilau, and they either discuss his reply or argue over it, both of them gesturing at his person, and he forces himself not to flinch when hands as large as his face come too close to it. He catches her name in the back and forth, Leej Kamar. Obi-Wan waits. Ben knows it won't take the Jedi more than 2 days to reach Tavorsky once the call has been made. The Yamri have locked him and all the delegates aside from Art Bode in a round, pit-like room several levels below the ground. There are dark tunnels here and workrooms, and Ben can taste sweat, salt, and misery in the air. The holding room is shielded, and he nods to himself as he recognizes the slave underbelly of Kirsk for what it is.
He won't get away with this. He won't,
Delegate Wynn keeps repeating, half in frustration and half in fear as the Quemian paces.
The Trade Federation has gotten away with far worse,
Lu Soon replies, her species less afflicted by the confines of subterranean design than the Quemian.
Has it really?
Sedrin inquires, her voice low and disillusioned. The young senator is not having a very easy go of her first foray out into the wild edges of the galaxy she serves. Lu Soorn offers her a pitying look. Sedrin probably can't tell, given Keldor physiology, but Ben can feel the emotion. They rest and pace fitfully, and in turns, Wynn seeming downright ill after the first few hours. Shadows occasionally pass on the other side of the shielded doorway, but no slave dares linger or peer too long. Not even the former warrior Kalish.
The Republic will figure out the truth, Wynn insists to the walls. This will not stand.
The Republic will figure out the truth,
Ben agrees, trying to track the feel of the day-night rotation of the planet so he can tell how long it's been.
As we are going to tell them.
You think so, Jedi?
Ambassador Soon inquires, but doesn't elaborate. Sedrin is greatly shaken, to say nothing of Palom Wynn's nerves.
I promise you, Senator, Ben replies.
Settled against the wall nearest the entrance, feeling his body heat leach into the stone, feeling the sun rise, feeling the anticipation in the Force. The atmosphere of the carrier is tense and grim, clouded with anxiety poorly released into the Force. The 50 Jedi chosen were all knights and Padawanless masters, and each and every one of them had been informed of the reported deaths of their fellow Jedi on what was supposed to have been a diplomatic mission.
If he was who he says he was, if he fought,
I don't want to meet what can kill a man who would have faced that and lived, Mace mutters quietly to Yoda, who grumbles irritably at him from his perch on a cargo shelf, trying to meditate.
Unknown the Kalish are not. Warriors, yes, strong and proud, Yoda says. But fought beside them in times past, Jedi have. And the caliber of the great enemy, they were not. However, overwhelmed Jedi can be, but many we are now.
I don't know, Mace replies. He volunteered for this mission, and I don't like that it went so wrong. If he knew something, he should have told us.
Guessing you are.
Yoda cracks his eyes open, feeling the ship shudder.
Arriving we will be. Prepare ourselves we should.
Around the hold, Jedi glance at each other, each bracing for the jolt that accompanies a drop from hyperspace, and all tense when they feel the planet below rife with the darkness of death and hatred and fear. Yoda grumbles, shifting as he grounds himself and his fellow Jedi in the Force, letting their strengths shine brighter and soothing many minds. Then someone down below, sensing their arrival, does what Jedi should not ever do. The loudest broadcaster in the Order, and Criffing well old enough to know better, drops all his shields and shouts into the Force.
Do not trust the Yamri! My Padawan has gone to the Kalish. Do not attack them!
Nearly half the knights buckle under the psychic wave, and those that do not grip their heads or moan in pain. Mace Windu grits his teeth, and Yoda, eyes closed and mouth pinched tightly, reaches back.
Heard you have been,
he sends irritably.
Obi-Wan screams and drops to the ground, hands pressing at his skull, trying to keep the pressure from breaking as the message washes through, his thoughts on fire and his shield shredded by the storm. The Kalish startle and holler over him, one prodding him with the blunt end of a spear only to be smacked by a fellow. Obi-Wan makes himself small in his mind, pulling on every lesson his master taught him about protecting the essence of himself, drawing further and further back from the world into his own mind, like a stone falling through a pond until nothing can reach him or touch him or hurt him, hiding away there until the ripples fade away and the surface is smooth, and he feels safe enough to swim back out of the dark. When he comes to, he has been moved to the hammock in one of the back rooms where they let him sleep the prior evening. He is no longer drowning under the shock of the invasive presence tearing through his mind to make itself heard, but his head is pounding, and he can't seem to block out the pervasive echoes of violent emotion left in the Force, creeping coldly into his thoughts, which themselves scatter and are hard to shape and follow.
Well, he thinks glumly, I guess that's why everyone always tells me to quiet down. He really didn't want to do that to his friends, though he knows he's given Bat and his other age mates more than one headache.
Obi-Wan pushes himself up with a groan, alerting the sentry who calls out to the main room. A minute later, Jai Shilal and Lige Kumar sweep into the room, Jai Shalil coming right into his personal space, laying a scaled hand on his hair and tipping his head up to study him with those bright reptilian eyes.
You were hurt, he states, feeling highly agitated.
His hand falls away. The Jedi have come, Obi-Wan replies, avoiding a more direct answer, one hand pressed to his temple, though he knows it won't help with the psychic pain.
But they have been told not to attack the Kalish.
They will come here,
Lige Kumar inquires.
I think they'll go to the Yamri first to rescue my master and the delegates. The Yamri will be punished for their action, but the Jedi will still try and make peace, Obi-Wan says, finding looking at her to be difficult. He can see death in her eyes, the reflection of those she has killed already and will kill again, the fierce pride she holds of doing so, and the bone-deep, unanswerable grief for the children they could not save. He can't shut it out, any of it.
We will not make peace, Jai Shalil sighs,
as if put upon by Obi-Wan's stubbornness on that topic, as well he should be.
They went back and forth about it for an entire day while Obi-Wan tried to explain Republic law and Jedi mandate, and Jai Shilal listed atrocity after atrocity that Obi-Wan would have nightmares about for years. What had been done to the Kalish was wrong, even evil. But he still could not condone the slaughter of every single member of a species, guilty or not.
If the Jedi are to interfere, then we will strike now before we are thwarted.
What? Obi-Wan gasps. You can't. We must,
Leish Kumar replies fiercely.
For our people, for all our sacred dead, for our future, we must do this, that the Hook will never again dare to look upon the Kalish.